Okay, oh, I'm on. That's good. Just as Anna was speaking, I was thinking of the first martyr for the gospel. It was a man who put himself on a rota to help hand out food. And he did it in such a kingdom way that people wanted to kill him. Now that is going on a rota with a purpose. Doing it in a way that releases the kingdom so much that those who are not for the kingdom want you dead. There you go. Some aspirational thoughts for you before we start. Yes, get in. Okay, so we're going back into Hebrews. Hope you, those of you here last week, enjoyed doing something a little bit different. And we're going to be going back to the streams on the first Sunday of October. But as I was thinking about last week's streams, kind of during my preparations for this week, I realized that although we've got three very different streams, they all have something in common. I'm not just talking about the fact that they were wonderfully taught by amazing people, because that goes without saying, of course. But actually what I realized is that each of them are, at their very core, about bringing a kingdom reality to earth. Think about it. Being naturally supernatural is about tapping into the heavenly power here on earth. Bill Johnson's book about being naturally supernatural is actually called When Heaven Invades Earth. And likewise, a discipleship culture is actually about seeing a kingdom culture released on earth. And as for the stories that Jesus told, well, he was always banging on about the kingdom of heaven being at hand, or telling us that the kingdom of heaven is like this. His parables are about explaining kingdom realities in earthly terms and stories. Kingdom realities being released on earth. And our passage today is also about this shift to a kingdom reality, shifting from earthly shadows to kingdom truth. Now, I have a bit of a confession to make, and this may be a bit shocking to many of you. I'll tell you to sit down, but you've got that covered, so that's good. For a number of years now, I have been a proud member of the geek community. Specifically, though not exclusively, a computer geek community. And I know you're shocked by this, and many of you may not have realized it, because obviously I hide it well. But it's a funny thing being a part of a community like that, or any community, because actually it grants you permissions that you didn't have before. And it gives you the ability to use language that outsiders can't. I can call someone an alpha geek, and they would see it as a term of respect. But if an outsider used that term, it would be seen as an insult. And lots of communities are like this. They have terms that you can use if you're an insider, but if you use it as an outsider, it's a bit insulting. And reading Hebrews can actually be a little bit difficult at times, a little bit awkward, because we're reading words that were written by an insider to his own community. But we're coming as outsiders. We're not Jewish. I'm not Jewish. I don't hide that either. Today's passage is especially difficult because the author is actually moving into quite strong language about the Jewish faith. Later on, we'll see he calls the priests and the temple mere copies and shadows. He then goes on and he calls the covenant, the core of the Jewish faith, obsolete. So there's some harsh language going on here, but it's language being spoken by an insider to his community. So with that in mind, we're going to get into Hebrews 8. We're going to read the whole chapter, Hebrews 8, verses 1 through 13. And it should hopefully appear behind me, but if not, you can follow along if you have a Bible with you. So Hebrews chapter 8, beginning at verse 1. Now, the point in what we are saying is this. We have such a high priest, one who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven, a minister in the holy places, in the true tent that the Lord set up, not man. For every high priest is appointed to offer gifts and sacrifices. Thus, it is necessary for this priest also to have something to offer. Now, if he were on earth, he would not be a priest at all, since there are priests who offer gifts according to the law. They serve a copy and shadow of the heavenly things. For when Moses was about to erect the tent, he was instructed by God, saying, "See that you make everything according to the pattern that was shown you on the mountain." But as it is, Christ has obtained a ministry that is much more excellent than the old, as the covenant he mediates is better, since it is enacted on better promises. For if that first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no occasion to look for a second. For he finds fault with them when he says, "Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will establish a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Not like the covenant that I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt. For they did not continue in my covenant, and so I showed no concern for them, declares the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my laws into their minds and write them on their hearts. And I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall not teach each other, they shall not teach each one to his neighbor, and each one his brother, saying, 'Know the Lord,' for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest. For I will be merciful toward their iniquities, and I will remember their sins no more." In speaking of a new covenant, he makes the first one obsolete. And what is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to vanish away. Okay, there's quite a lot in there. We're going to try and unpack a little bit of it today. First off, when he starts, and he starts immediately by saying, now, the point in what we are saying, so he's referring back to where we've already been. And what we've been talking about in the previous chapters is identifying Jesus as this great high priest in the order of Melchizedek. And he goes and he says, look, Jesus, if he'd been on earth, which he was, he wouldn't have ever become a priest. He says that in verse 4. He says, if he were on earth, he would not be a priest at all. Because he wasn't born into the family line of Aaron. So being an earthly high priest was just not a possibility within the Jewish faith for Jesus. But Jesus isn't an earthly priest of the line of Aaron, anointed by men. He's a heavenly high priest of the order of Melchizedek, anointed by God himself. He is an eternal high priest. And then the author of the Hebrews, he goes on further and he says that the priests and the offerings and even the temple itself are just copies, shadows of a heavenly reality. The earthly tent was constructed by Moses. And he was using God's instructions, the pattern that says that he received on the mountain. And so these are God's instructions to make a copy of a heavenly reality. But Jesus doesn't minister in a copy. He ministers in the true tent. And this ministry, it says in verse 6, is much more excellent. And it's better because the covenant that Christ mediates is better. It's built on better promises. And it's this new covenant that's actually the centerpiece of our scripture today. This new, heavenly, eternal covenant. And most of the second half of this chapter is given over to actually a quotation from the book of Jeremiah. So once again, the author is leading his original listeners to scriptures that they would know as a way of underlining the supremacy of Christ in all things. And so the old covenant that he refers to is the covenant that God made with the people of Israel through Moses on Mount Sinai, way back in the book of Exodus. But this prophecy from Jeremiah is over 500 years before even the book of Hebrews was written. And Jeremiah prophesies and God tells his people that the covenant had been broken. It says in verse 9, it says, "For they did not continue in my covenant, and so I showed no concern for them, declares the Lord. Because a covenant, well, we talked a few weeks ago about promises and oaths. And this is another layer. This is covenant. And a covenant is an agreement between two parties. Promises and oaths, the burden rests on the person who makes the promise or the person who makes the oath. But a covenant requires both parties to uphold it. It's like a legal contract. Or today, even, you know, a marriage. We still refer to sometimes marriages as being a covenant. And so God promises in Jeremiah a new covenant. And it's a covenant that finds its fulfillment in Jesus. And this covenant is a heavenly covenant. It's an unbreakable, eternal covenant. The old covenant was given through Moses and it was written on tablets of stone. The old covenant required people to change their lives, to follow God's laws, to perform sacrifices when they failed. But the new covenant has been given through Jesus and is written on our hearts. The new covenant transforms our lives. It releases us to a place where we choose to follow God and where all our failures have already been paid for by the sacrifice of Jesus. Look at what he says about this new covenant. He says in verse 10, he says, I will put my laws into their minds and write them on their hearts. The old covenant was a written covenant, written on stone, handed to Moses. And all the laws and regulations in the book of Deuteronomy, which is attempting to make a conform people to God's will from the outside. But it wasn't transformative. This new covenant, it says, is written on our hearts. It's a transformation of the heart which leads to an outward change. It is sealed by the Spirit that comes within us and causes us to change. Not because we're trying really hard, but because God is within us and our hearts change and our lives are transformed through that. And he says, I will be their God. And they shall be my people. This is the same underlying promise that God made in the first covenant. Why? Because God has not changed. God has no need to change. And it is still the best promise ever. It says in verse 11, it says, they shall not teach each one his neighbor and each one his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest. Because our God is a personal God. Now, the people of Israel, they would regard God as their God, but they wouldn't have this sense of the personal. Because they would go to the temple to offer their sacrifices for the things that they had done. They would have the priests involved and the Levites. And although God was their God, it wasn't nearly as personal. We get to meet God through Jesus. We read in one of the earlier chapters, it referred back to the curtain being torn in two. This is the curtain in the temple that separated the people from the holiest place, where only the high priest could go. And this curtain was torn in two, but this wasn't just a physical act that occurred when Jesus died. It was a spiritual act. The curtain was torn in two, not just in the earthly tent, the temple at that time, the place that could not be entered, but actually it tore the curtain that separated us from the earthly tent, from the heavenly tent, the heavenly throne room, so that we can enter not just the copy of heaven, but actually the reality. The heavenly reality of God's throne room is now available to us. And our God is personal through this covenant. He says in verse 12, the last part of the quotation from Jeremiah, says, God says, for I will be merciful toward their iniquities, and I will remember their sins no more. You see, the old covenant had a series of rules and regulations, and if you broke those rules and regulations, then there was a series of sacrifices and offerings that you would make in order to tick those things off. It was like a big ledger. and you would write down all the things that you had done wrong, and then you would make the appropriate sacrifices to cancel off those debts. But in the new covenant, there is still a ledger, and it has four words in it. It says, Jesus paid in full. And that's not to say that we don't still need to confess that we do wrong, but the debt's already been paid. And God remembers it no more. So when you come to God and you say, God, I know that I just did this last week, God says, you did what? All I've got here is a piece of paper that says Jesus paid in full. I don't remember that thing that you did, that you confessed, and that Jesus has already paid for. This is the new covenant. Do you get it? Jesus died as a sacrifice for all our sins, past and present and future. It is Jesus that mediates this new covenant for us. It's Jesus that bought it with his blood. It is Jesus that calls us to faith. It is Jesus that transforms our lives through his Spirit so that our hearts are then inclined towards God and to doing his will. It is Jesus, 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 Jesus all the way through. We don't get to screw this one up. We cannot break this covenant. If we want it, it is ours. No questions asked, no sin too big, no possibility of getting it wrong, because none of it rests on us. The covenant was made with us through Jesus, and he cannot get it wrong. Now, none of this to say that we don't seem to try our hardest to make a mess of it. We have this seemingly endless capacity to make this much harder than it actually is. And so did these early Christians, because they were obviously thinking about going back to their old ways, the old earthly priests, the old earthly sacrifices, and their old earthly broken covenant. Otherwise, this letter would sound a lot different if it had been written at all. But as I've mentioned before, we're not Jewish. And yet we still seem at times to want to find earthly priests, sacrifices, and covenants. We seek earthly men and women to follow, people to confess to, people to mediate for us. Whether it's websites with anonymous confessionals, whether it's psychologists with comfy couches, whether it's partners to pat us on the shoulder and tell us that everything is going to be okay. Not that any of these things are bad, but Jesus needs to come first. And we make earthly sacrifices to get rid of our guilt and our shame. That Bible in a year that followed the year with no Bible. That early morning prayer meeting because praying once a week ticks it off the list. That mission trip we took, that extra offering, that hospitality for the person that we don't really like. Not coming from a heart, but an attempt to change our hearts from the outside. And we make earthly covenants too, much like the old covenant. God, if you would just do this thing, then I will follow you forever. If you could just fix this problem, then I will do that thing that you want. Stop trying to pay for the free gift. Stop trying to complete a deal that was sealed 2,000 years ago. Accept and rejoice in the new covenant and let heaven invade you. We're going to share communion together because Jesus, when he came and he spent his last night with his disciples, he shared with them the bread and the wine. And when he took the wine, he says, this is the wine of the new covenant, the blood of the new covenant. A covenant to the Jewish people was sealed in blood. And Jesus sealed the new covenant for us. And so when we share together in that communion, we are saying, I want that new covenant. And it's as simple as taking and drinking and remembering all that has already been done. That releases us from all that we've done and allows God to say to us, Jesus, paid in full.